Hi there, this is Mike Morrell, Buzz Seminar co-host, and I am talking right now to Ray Edwards. Ray is someone I've gotten to know over the past year or so as a part of a mastermind group together, and Ray wears many hats. He's a copywriter, a blogger, an author, a podcaster, a speaker, and a transformational event host, among several other things. And yet, what I find unique about Ray, and we'll go into this in our interview, is that while he wears these many hats, he seems to have a singularity of focus in his life and in his business. So, Ray, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Mike. It's my pleasure to be here.
Excellent. So, one of the first things that Buzz Seminar course participant is likely to notice, someone who is an aspiring author or blogger, when they visit your website at rayedwards.com, they notice you're prolific. Like we just said, you blog, you write books, you podcast, you host events. You do all kinds of things on a regular basis, and I know I'm probably leaving off a thing or three. So drilling down for a moment on the writing portion of everything you do, how do you do it? How do you both blog and write books consistently?
Well, I'm always striving for greater consistency. I like to be transparent about that, but I think it really comes down to a word that is not super popular in today's society, and that word is discipline.
Mm.
I don't know any other way to explain it other than you just have to do the work. And there's a story that I tell sometimes about a period in my life where I was working a corporate job, and I was in the radio broadcasting business, and I wanted to write. And I would complain frequently to my wife about, I just don't have time to write. I'm so busy with the job, and I'm so tired when I get home. And finally, one day, I think she just heard enough. And she said, why are you complaining? And I said, well, because I want to write. And she said, no, you don't. And I said, how can you say that? She said, because if you wanted to write, you would be writing instead of complaining. And I realized, ouch, she's correct. And, I started looking at where are the opportunities for me to find time to do these things that I say I want to do. And I realized I was watching television. I was hanging out at the bookstore. I was playing games online. There were so many things that I was doing other than the thing that I said that I wanted to do. And I just had to make a commitment to myself that I'm going to actually do this thing. And so it's a discipline of setting aside the time. For me, it's I have to make an appointment with myself on the calendar, and it's in my Google Calendar. Mm. And when people call or write me and say, I want to, let's have an interview or let's have lunch together or can you go to a seminar with me or whatever the request may be, I look at my calendar and I will say, no, I'm sorry, I have an appointment at that time. And nobody ever challenges that. But it's that discipline of setting aside, consecrating the time, if you will, to do the writing. And secondly, writing faster. So I just had to develop some chops at writing faster and give up the idea that, I'm only going to get a page or two a day done. So I realized, well, it's possible to write 10 or 15 pages a day if you get focused enough and you block out all the distractions. So that's at least part of the answer. Discipline, focus, and learn to write faster.
Okay, wow. And if someone wants to learn to write faster, are there any resources you could direct them to?
Well, I have a course called Rapid Writing Method. It's at rapidwritingmethod.com. It's for a very specific kind of writing of a very specific kind of book. But the techniques that we teach in that program are applicable to, I think, any kind of writing. So that would be a good place to start.
Okay. And you cut your teeth, I believe, vocationally as an advertising copywriter, which is a skill that you still rely on today. So I'm wondering, why should a novelist, say, or a nonfiction author care about developing copywriting skills?
Well, you should only be interested in developing your copywriting skills if you want people to read what you write.
Oh, okay, just that.
That's the only reason why. So if you learn the principles of good copywriting, what you begin to learn is how to title your works, how to write the copy that goes on the back of the book. Let's talk about being a novelist. I'm currently working on some fiction in the background of all the other things that I'm doing, and I like to practice what I preach. I tell people you need to have a mentor to coach you through something that's new to you and to cause you to rise to new levels of excellence. And you need to seek out the best mentor you can find, and often you have to pay them. So when I decided I wanted to write fiction, I started looking for somebody who could help me with that. You may remember, you and I are part of a group, a mastermind group together, where we occasionally ask one another for resources, and I was looking for a writer's group that would help me hone my skill at writing fiction. And
that's
ultimately,
right.
What I ended up doing was hiring a writing coach who is a New York Times best-selling fiction author.
Wow.
And he's
wow.
written numerous bestsellers, and it's not cheap to be coached by him.
Mm-hmm.
But we have these frequent calls with a small group of us who are his students, and he answers our questions, and we talk through certain issues. And the reason I'm telling you all this is because we had a session recently where I was talking to him about marketing versus the talent and craft of writing, and I said, do you think that success as a fiction author is more dependent upon your craftsmanship as a writer or upon who you know, like your connections in the business, or is it a matter of being a good marketer and business person? And he said, absolutely, 100%, without a doubt, it has more to do with being a good marketer and business person than it has to do with any of the other things you just mentioned. And so As a novelist, you know, you are writing sales copy when you write that book proposal, that query letter, when you write the copy on the back of the book, when you write the chapter or section titles of your novel, when you decide about how you're going to end each chapter. Are you going to end it in a way that leaves people hoping for a little taste of something more so they turn the page to the next chapter? That's all persuasive copywriting technique. And then as a nonfiction author, it becomes even more obvious, you know, that you need to have those skills. And in fact, my one of my favorite stories about a great copywriter named Ted Thomas is he had a renown for being able to write chapter titles. Ted Nicholas, not Ted Thomas, sorry. Ted Nicholas, he would be paid enormous amounts of money to write chapter titles in nonfiction books. He would take a book that was already written, and he would rewrite the chapter title, because what he did was he wrote each chapter title as if it were a headline that was designed to draw the reader into that book, to make them read the table of contents and say, I have to have this book. And so I just recently had an author approach me with a manuscript that he had completed, and it's a really good book, but his chapter titles were boring. They were just like, who would want to read this? And so I helped him rewrite his chapter titles, and I used my copywriting skills to do that. So, you know, there's so many reasons why, Mike. It's because of the table of contents, the way you title your books and chapters, the way you write the copy on the blurb on the back page of the book, the way you write your query letters and your book proposals, the way you write your letters to your agent and your publisher, and so only if you want all those people to actually read what you write and be persuaded by it, that's the only reason to learn copywriting.
Okay, just that. Got it. Well, so going into specific copywriting tips might be a little bit out of our focus for our time here today, but if you could share your number one copywriting tip, what would it be?
This is an easy one for me because this is the challenge that everybody faces, even me. And if you can get past this problem, your writing, your persuasive writing, will be 100% more effective. And everybody thinks they don't do this. Everybody thinks this doesn't apply to them. And what I'm talking about is you've got to overcome the tendency to write from a author focus and start writing from a reader focus. We as authors think that we know the mind of our reader. And in fact, one of the great copywriters in the ad game of the last century was a guy named Robert Collier, and he famously wrote, to write an effective ad, you must join the conversation that's already taking place in the mind of the reader. And that's an often quoted bit of wisdom, but almost nobody does it. When you are writing in a way that resonates with the conversation that's already taking place in the mind of the reader, the reaction you get from them is strong. This is, you know, you've hit the target when you get responses like, I don't know how you did this, this is exactly how I feel, but I've never been able to put it into words before. Or, this is the first time anybody's ever described exactly how I feel about this subject. Or sometimes it's just a, yes, this, you know, I read this and it changed my life. It totally flipped my paradigm around. People, when you strike that note, when you're speaking their language, when you're singing their song for them better than they can sing it themselves, they respond to your writing. You know, we have a mutual friend named Frank, who's written a number of fantastic books. And of course, I'm talking about Frank Viola. And he has this talent, this gifting, really, I believe, from God, to be able to write in such a way that he speaks directly to the hearts and minds of the people that he's writing for. And that is my number one copywriting tip. You can take all the techniques, all the tricks and tactics and throw them out the window, but if you can get this part right, if you can really get inside the mind and the heart of the people you're writing to, all the rest of that stuff will take care of itself.
Okay. Well, so if we want more guidance on how to get inside of the minds of our prospective readers, as well as some of those extra tips and tricks and techniques that you're very well versed in, where could we go to access more?
I would just recommend that you go to my website, rayedwards.com. Mm-hmm. That is my blog. It is my home on the web. And so I've got hundreds of articles there on all sorts of topics about online business and marketing and writing and copywriting, and there's plenty of resources available totally for free. I have a weekly podcast that we produce. We've produced it once a week at the time of this recording now for, I think, 144 weeks in a row, and we don't plan to break that streak anytime soon. So there's tons of free resources and help available at rayedwards.com.
Okay, excellent. And yeah, I'll put in a personal plug for the podcast. If you're listening to this and you're like me and maybe you do a lot of reading or writing for a living and enjoy giving your eyes a break and perking up your ears, you know, Ray's podcast is excellent. It has doubled my kitchen cleaning time many a times as I listen while I'm doing the dishes, and then I drop the dishes and write down some of Ray's insights as he's explaining on a weekly basis how he runs his business and his life.
Oh, thank you.
Sure, yeah. And speaking of, you know, you've created what you call a lifestyle business, where you decided what kind of life you wanted to have first, and then you've tailored your business around what most inspires you. But I'm curious, was it always this way? And if not, how did you transition from living for your work to working in service of your life?
Well, I love the way you expressed that. That's a beautifully crafted sentence you just spoke. I would love to tell you that I just had a flash of brilliance one day early in my career and figured this all out, but you know, the truth is it's a continuum, and it's been a progressive revelation, if you will, and you know, I'm still having it. But I have learned that if you don't define the life that you want to be living ahead of the decisions about your job or your business or your work, if you're not in control of your work will control you. And this is why there are so many physicians and dentists and lawyers, for instance, who are miserable in their jobs, but they feel trapped, like they can't escape. They invested so many years and so much money in the training that qualify them to do the work that they're doing that they can't see any possible way of just chucking all that and starting over from scratch, and they hate their lives. You know, there's a common saying among physicians that the dream of every physician is to be able to live the life of his wife and children.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Funny and sad all at the same time.
Yes. So I've gone through various stages of trying to figure this out. and I've gotten better at it over the last few years. But I really, for anybody who really wants to figure out how to build a business that serves their life in a way that's healthy for them, and you know, this is not just about self-centeredness. I believe it's about fully expressing what God crafted you to be as a human being and as part of His kingdom. And that springs from the desires of your heart when aligned with the principles of righteousness that are found in Scripture. And then once you know, once you realize, well, this is what I feel I was designed to do, this is what I feel called to do with my life, these are the kinds of things that I'm drawn to, then you have to sort of think forward and, you know, kind of prophesy into your own future, like, what do I want my life to look like? And what I mean by that specifically, Mike, is do you want to work 80 hours a week in your business? No. Most of us would say no.
Mm-hmm.
So I've developed this process that I teach people where that's where we start. You know, how much do you want to work? And when do you want to work? And so, you know, most people will tell you that they'd be happy if they could cut their work week down to 40 hours. Used to be that was, you know, anything over that was called overtime.
Right.
But now as people are like, if I could just get down to 40 hours, that would be good because I'm working 60 or 80 now. So let's say you decide you want to work 30 hours a week. You want to work 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, leaving enough time and space and margin to be able to spend time with your family, with your children. I mean, you know, you've got a new child, and you want to spend time with your new child and with the rest of your family. And if you're working 80 hours a week, it's hard to have that quality time. So you got to think those things through. So if it's 30 hours a week for you, then you can back up and say, okay, well, how much money do I need to have to meet our minimum expenses? And then what's a target above that so we can have, you know, something more than just enough? Because just enough will leave you in a constant state of stress. So what's the target income then? And if it's you know, whatever that number is, let's say that, you know, in the example that I just gave you, that you're going to work 30 hours a week, and let's say you're going to do that 48 weeks out of the year. So that comes out to 1,440 hours in the year that you are actually available to work. And if you know that you want to make, let's say, $120,000 income per year, then it becomes pretty simple math. You take $120,000 and you divide it by 1,440 hours, and you get $83.33. That is the hourly value of work that you have to achieve. And it doesn't mean that you have to go find a job where somebody pays you $83.33 an hour, but you have to do work that creates that kind of value. So whether it's writing books or teaching seminars or workshops or consulting or coaching or running your business or whatever it is you do, that's what you've got to be earning if you're going to be able to realistically live the lifestyle that you say you want. So this is just one example of a way of deciding on the life you want first and then figuring out how to build a business to support that.
Yeah, okay. And I find myself asking this after almost every question, but I think that, you know, probably listeners' ears are perked. If they want to learn more about your specific, you know, system for discerning your life's path and then creating a business accordingly, what resources have you created that address this?
Currently, I have several articles on my website and at rayedwards.com, and we're actually developing some brand new resources right now. We just released the first of them. These are video trainings, so we're updating all of our trainings to be more reflective of the modern conditions of today. A lot of things that I talked about 3 years ago don't work as well as they used to because, you know, the world changes and the demands on our time and attention change. So the first resource we developed is a video training called Three Keys to Changing the World and Watching Your Business Grow. And that's about creating a business that builds wealth, but from a standpoint of doing so in order to make the world a better place. And that's a free training, and you just sign up for our newsletter, and we give you the video training for free. And we have some other trainings that we're developing that go hand-in-hand with this, and among them will be a training about this very topic that we're talking about, how to design a business that serves the lifestyle that you want to live. So the answer is the same. To every question you ask me, if you're going to say, where's the resource, just go to rayedwards.com, get signed up for our newsletter, and you'll be able to have access to all the resources that we currently have and all the new resources that we develop.
Okay, excellent. Well, so, Ray, in getting to know you as a part of our mastermind group for the past year plus, I've been impressed by both your integrity and your productivity. And I see integrity as a kind of inner coherence where you know yourself, act consistently, and your outsides match your insides. Could you say a little bit about how you understand integrity and how you live it out and how this has impacted you as a writer and a business person?
Sure. I wish I believed I have as much integrity as you apparently believe I have.
Okay.
I believe exactly what you said. I think it is a matter of being, well, think about where the word comes from, integrated, so that your inner thoughts, attitudes, desires, beliefs are integrated with your external actions and interactions with other people, and that you behave consistently with your values. And, you know, I certainly intend to do that, and I think I've become much better at it than I used to be. There was a time in my life, and I don't know if anybody will be able to relate to this, probably it's only me, but there was a time in my life when I projected a certain image to the outside world that was actually very different from the life that I actually led internally. And by internally,
yeah, no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I figured you probably wouldn't, and it's probably only me that has difficulty.
Yeah, but say more about your unique condition there, Ray.
Yes. So for those of you who are interested in this very foreign idea that you've never experienced, let me tell you that it can be very stressful because, you know, I constantly, during that period when it was the worst for me, I constantly lived in fear of people finding out, you know, what I was really like. And what changed the whole picture was developing an awareness of and a relationship and living in the reality of the presence of God in my life through Jesus Christ. And, I had a friend who was a pastor, and he was mentoring a group of young men and was talking to them about pornography and, you know, not viewing pornography and not being involved in that particular activity. And he said, he asked them one day, he said, do you believe in God? And they all said yes. And he said, do you believe God is real, that he's everywhere? And they all said yes. And he said, and do you believe that he knows everything and sees everything? And they all said yes. And he said, well, if you believe that, and you say you believe it, and if you also participate in or engage in viewing or enjoying or call it, you want to call it, pornography, then you don't really believe what you said you just believed. Because how could you be involved in something like that if you truly believe that what you say you believe is really real? You're in the presence of God, and you're going to engage in that activity. And when he shared that with me, it just kind of blew my circuits because I realized there's so many things. It doesn't have to be about pornography. There's so many things in our lives, at least for me at that point in time in my life, that I realized, wow, if I am conscious and aware of the presence of God, the Spirit of God resting on me, how could I drag him into this situation or this place, or how could I behave in this manner in his presence? Not because I'm afraid that he's going to strike me down. He's already forgiven me. He's already extended his grace toward me, the unmerited favor of his love and his unconditional forgiveness, and I have all that, but, you know, when you're in love with someone, you don't want to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me, that was the reality that really hit home, was that, you know, when I do these certain things in my life that I do, and I know that I'm in God's presence all the time and that he loves me so much and that I'm hurting him, that makes me sad. So when you love someone, you don't want to disappoint them. You want to delight them. And so that was a huge turning point for me. And so, I still, you know, every day I have an awareness of times when I'm behaving or acting in a way that isn't as integrous as I want it to be. But for me, it started, the big transformation started when I decided I have no secrets. I'm just not going to keep secrets from people. You know, if people, it's like you started by talking about how great my integrity was, and the first thing I said was, I wish I felt I have as much integrity as you say you think I do. It's not because I'm trying to engage in false humility or trying to puff myself up or and it's not that I'm flagellating myself all the time about how imperfect I am. It's just that I like to see things the way they really are, not worse than they are and not better than they are, but acknowledge this is how things really are. And so for me, it's a practice of the presence of God and a practice of walking in that kind of integrity that you're talking about, where I don't want to say or represent something that isn't true in my life. And so I don't know if that's too vague and philosophical an answer, but that's what I got for you.
No, I don't think so at all. I think, you know, what I'm hearing you saying is that your integrity is very much spiritually sourced in your relationship with God, and that it's not based in a sort of performance mentality, but it's based on a relational dynamic and on love. And I like, you know, what you said about what I heard, at least, is that there's a lot of grace in there. And actually, when I think of my experience of you having integrity, like, say, in the mastermind group, what I notice is that you either do what you say you're going to do, or when you don't, those times when it might not happen quite the same way, like, oh, let's talk at such and such time or do this or that, you're very transparent about, hey, you know, if this didn't happen, I'm owning it and I apologize. So for me, you know, integrity does not necessarily imply a flawless track record, but it does imply consistent awareness of when we, you know, perhaps fall short of our ideals.
Wow. You talk like a writer.
Well, thanks. I'm inspiring.
That's beautifully said. You expressed in about 3 minutes what it took me about 15 to say, so thank you.
No, you're welcome. So let's move on to productivity, the second part where I perceive, at least, that you're excelling. And this might be a little bit of a repeat from what we've covered earlier, but zooming the lens out from simply writing to all the different facets of your lifestyle business, what is your typical workflow like?
Well, for me, it's productivity flows from being clear on what you really want to accomplish. And there are two books that I highly recommend to people who want to become more productive. They are David Allen's Getting Things Done, and he's just about ready to release a new version of that. It's funny to me. I didn't realize this until recently. I was looking at the old version, and it was still talking about things like Palm Pilots.
Okay.
This needs an update because this is not really correct and current. But the principles still stand true. And the other book is a book by Greg McKeown called Essentialism. And I think both books really are pursue the same thing, which is they're pursuing doing less, but doing the things that are doing only the things that are essential or important. And so my workflow, as it stands now, is I keep a comprehensive list of things that need to be done according to the values that I've decided that I hold, and I prioritize those by contexts in which I'm able to work. So I have a list of people that I need to call on the phone, and they're on a list called phone, and it's just a list. It says phone at the top, and it has all these people's names and their phone number, so that when I have the time, the energy, and the resources available, and I realize this is a good time for me to make phone calls, I have my phone, I have time, I have energy to do it, I'm going to start calling people on the list, I can be very efficient in doing that. And there are other things that I can only do when I'm on the Internet. So I have a list that's called Internet, when I have Internet access. And so I have these context-based lists that allow me, when I'm in any given situation, to know exactly what's available for me to do. And I focus, as David Allen teaches, on what's the next doable action in regards to this thing that I'm trying to accomplish. So anything that has more than one step is not a to-do item or a task. It's a project. If I say, you know, arrange trip to Nashville for January, that is not a task. because there's multiple steps involved. I have to research airline rates. I have to buy an airline ticket. I have to check my calendar, decide on the dates that we're going to have the meeting in Nashville. I have to figure out where I'm going to stay. I have to make arrangements for my stay. There's a bunch of different steps. So for me then it becomes, well, what's the next logical step to start making that happen? So maybe it is email the members of the group to ask about dates. Maybe that's step one, and that's just the next action. When I'm at my computer and I'm thinking about, well, what do I do next? I look at my list. I realize that's the next thing, so I pop an email off to everybody, as I did. You experienced this.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the practical how the workflow goes. But there's a new realization that I've had lately that is kind of embarrassing to me.
Okay.
But I think this is true for a lot of people. I'm not as busy as I like to think I am.
Mm.
I've really started paying very close attention to what I'm doing every day. And this is an old school time management exercise that has kind of fallen out of vogue. People don't talk about it much anymore. But it's really worth taking a couple of days of your typical week and don't modify what you normally do. But as much as possible, just do what you normally do and write down a log of your time, as much of everything as you do and how long you do it and what time you do it as possible. And when I did this and took a look at what I was actually doing, I realized I'm not as busy as I think I am.
Mm.
I'm inefficient. I'm fragmented in my activities. I'm trying to multitask. I'm not thinking through carefully enough the activities of my day and putting them in a sequence that gives me the most productivity in the least amount of time. And when I began to have that realization, I immediately stopped saying I'm busy. I don't even speak those words anymore, because I think that begins to set up a framework in your mind that fools you and causes you to reinforce this false belief that you have. We all have the same amount of time every day available to us, and so we get to decide how to use it. So I've just been very conscious of this is big. This is huge. This is a genius revelation, Mike. Stand back. I've been very conscious of not wasting time.
Well, I do think that's, you know, very simple, but also something that we easily overlook. And, you know, your practice of creating a log of how you spend your time sounds complementary to a practice I recently picked up. I was just recently on a spiritual retreat out in rural West Virginia. There's really not that many other kinds of West Virginia, now that I say that.
I've been there, so I know exactly what you mean.
The big city. And, you know, it was part teaching, part prayer and times for silence and reflection, but part of it was actually labor. And we were often doing sort of manual labor tasks, either outside on the retreat grounds, working in the garden, or washing windows. And occasionally someone who was with the retreat center would come by and ring a bell. And when they rang a bell, we were to freeze exactly where we were and just notice. Notice how we were holding ourselves, how we were holding our bodies, what our facial expression was, as best as we can recall, what our mental and emotional state was in that moment. And it was more of an awareness exercise than a productivity exercise per se, but I think that the two flow into each other. Just how much do we go unconsciously throughout our days going through the motions? And, you know, my biggest time waster, I know, is Facebook. And I could say, well, you know, Facebook is part of what I rely on for my work. And that's true, but if I'm honest with myself, you know, a lot of the time I'm spending on Facebook is not work-related. And some of it I might legitimately say, hey, I enjoy it, and this is how I choose to invest some of my time. But when I'm conscious about it, I recognize that I don't want to be spending as much time on it as I am. And so it seems to me like some combination of you know, logging one's time and awareness practice, like what we did on the retreat, could really serve.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it really brings home the point of the importance of doing what you're doing while you're doing it and not doing what you're not doing when you're not doing it.
Yes.
And that is more difficult for most of us than I think we are aware. And so mm-hmm. there's tons of little tricks I use to try to get myself out of that space. And so, for instance, when I'm writing, I turn off my cell phone, I turn off the ringer on my phone that's on my desk, I turn off all my instant messaging stuff. I actually often disconnect from the internet entirely and just write. I have a writing application that I use that it's a full screen, distraction free writing tool, so that, you know, my choice of when I'm writing is to write or to sit and stare at the screen. Those are my two choices. And I also use focused blocks of time. So when I'm going to write, I write usually in 33-minute increments. I set a timer, and for those 33 minutes, those are the choices I have, either write or stare at the screen. And, you know, eventually, sometimes I sit and stare for a long time, and eventually I get bored, and so I think, well, I might as well write. That's the only other thing I can do. And I have found that is very helpful. And so being mindful, being aware of our you know, self-aware of what we're doing and thinking, and then focusing on just the thing that we're doing. Our society today, the environment in which we live, begs us to be distracted and to not think about where we actually are and what we're actually doing. And I don't think most people are aware of how much of a drain, how much of a life-sucking force that it can be. There's a guy named Brendan Burchard who recently released a book. I'm not a fan of the title, The Motivation Manifesto. But he writes about this phenomenon in this book. He says, we are too often lost in the abyss of unawareness. We regularly miss the energy and blessings around us and the importance of this very moment. It's as though we prefer to be elsewhere doing something else, as if we are living in distant time zones, hours behind or ahead of the joyous tick and bliss of now.
Wow. Yeah, that's profound, and that really speaks to me when I'm thinking about goal setting, and sometimes even the very mechanism of goal setting, where I project something out into the future, whether it's a business-related goal, a spiritual goal, a physical fitness goal. And sometimes I notice that goals are a reasonable way for me to move from point A to point B, but other times they do just sort of seem like more of this exercise in fantasy that dissipates my initiative in the here and now. But what that quote brings to mind is the idea that how we do anything is how we do everything.
Yes. Absolutely. There is a quote that if you meditate on it will result in some serious reflection on your part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm finding. So, Ray, thank you so much for your time today. I feel like, you know, this is sort of a coda in our entire interview, but, you know, I think that Buzz Seminar course participants are highly motivated to turn their blogging and writing into a sustainable living. And as we've, you know, covered several times, you offer a wealth of insight and resources online. What would you recommend, specifically knowing that, you know, Buzz participants are coming, they're writing, they're blogging, they're coming up to RayEdwards.com. Are there is there a path that you'd recommend, a few things that they should check out first as they're getting acquainted with the portal that is your website?
Well, sure. I mean, I appreciate you giving me it's very graceful of you to give me the opportunity to talk about that. I would suggest that you start with the About page of the website, because it explains really what my purpose in having the blog and creating the materials that we offer, what the purpose behind all that is. There's a video on there that we just produced because I felt like I needed more of a personal, I wanted some eye contact, you know, to say, hey, this is who I am, not just the Photoshopped guy on the cover of the website, but this is really who I am and what I'm about. So that's a good place to start. Signing up for the newsletter is a great idea, because you get the free video training, and there's more of those to follow on with that. The podcast, I definitely, if you do no other thing, I feel as though that's the most effective thing that we do. And I say we because it's not just me. I have a small team of people that help me get these things done. That's something we haven't really talked about, but part of being productive is stop trying to do everything yourself. God didn't make it this way. If you're trying to do everything yourself, you might have an ego thing going on. Might be feeling like you're the only person who can do it well or who you can rely on, or that's something to check in with yourself about. But anyway, yeah. I'm off track. And then on the About page, I have links to some of my most popular blog posts that might be a good place for people to, you know, sort of touch base with what's going on with my thinking and the things that I'm sharing with other folks. And that ought to be enough to keep you busy for a while. By the time you do all that, you'll be sick of me.
Okay, and provided that by the time we do all that, we're not sick of you, what if somebody wants to go deeper, say, experiencing a mastermind group or a transformational workshop with you? Like, what's up on the horizon for 2015?
Well, we do have a paid mastermind group that we're putting together. It's a small group of people that I'm mentoring. We're going to be touching base on a weekly basis. That is something that we're taking applications for now through toward the end of December. We'll stop accepting applications probably and get moving with the group. That's one possibility. We have a couple of workshops that are coming up later in the year that are, as you refer to them, transformational workshops. Again, we take small groups of people through transformational experience, and in one workshop we're focused on helping develop the framework for writing a book and maybe getting most of the outline complete. Some people have come out with their manuscript complete. Those are the overachievers.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, the way to be really keep track of when all that's coming up is get on our newsletter list. We won't spam you, and we don't share your email with anybody else, and that's the best way to keep up with what we're doing.
Okay, excellent. And, you know, by the time our listeners are hearing this, unfortunately, the deadline will have passed for this mastermind group that you have coming up. But you heard it here. If you're on the email newsletter, you will know when these things are arising. So once again, Ray, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I'm just honored that you asked me to do this, and I really love and respect you and Frank and David and everybody involved with the Buzz Seminar and what you're doing. And I couldn't recommend more strongly to people that if, you know, you're even mildly interested in being a Buzz Seminar participant or getting the materials, I've looked at a lot of material in this area of knowledge, and I can tell you that this is the most comprehensive, implementable system I have seen.